Just how effective, as an inquiry stopper, was the story of the girl and the small quantity, is shown by the way the Society for Psychical Research was influenced by it. See the journal SPR, October, 1919. Mr. Guy's letter to the Times is taken as final. No knowledge of conflicting statements by him is shown. The Society did not investigate. A small quantity can be explained, as it should be explained, but barrels of it must be forgotten. Case dismissed. If the Rev. Hugh Guy described at one time a downpour, which had driven out him and his tables, chairs, beds, rugs, all those things that I think of seriously, because I have recently done some moving, myself, and then told of a small quantity, why have I not an explanation of this contradiction? I wrote to Mr. Guy, asking him to explain, having the letter registered for the sake of a record. I have received no answer. In the London Daily Mail, September 3, 1919, are reproduced two photographs of oil dripping from different ceilings. Large drops of oil are clearly visible. 6. Flows of blood from holy images. I take for a proposition that, though nothing can be proved because, if all phenomenal things are continuous, there is, in a final sense, nothing phenomenal. Anything can be said to be proved because, if all phenomenal things are continuous, the most preposterous nonsense must somewhere be linked with well-established beliefs. If I had the time for an extra job, I'd ask readers to think up loony theories, and send them to me, and I'd pick out the looniest of all, and engage to find abundant data to make it reasonable to anybody who wanted to think it reasonable. Once upon a time I thought that stories of flows of blood from holy images were as ridiculous as anything that I had ever read in any astronomical, or geological textbook, or in any treatise upon economics or mechanics. Well, then, what happened? It occurred to me that stories of flows of blood from holy images are assimilable with our general expressions upon teleportations. Whereupon, automatically, the formerly despised became the somewhat reasonable. Though now and then I am ill-natured with scientific methods, it is no pose of mine that I am other than scientific, myself, in our expressions. I am tied down like any college professor or Zulu wise man. As a start off, I suggest that if we accept that flows of water ever have appeared at points in objects, called houses, a jolt is softened, and we pass easily into thinking that other fluids may have appeared at points in other objects, called holy images. The jolt is softened still more, if we argue that other fluids did appear at points in the object, called a house, at Swantonoverse. There may be teleportation, and maybe for ages the secret of it has been known by esoteric ones. It may be that priests, especially in the past, when, sociologically, they were of some possible use, have known how to teleport a red fluid, or blood, to points upon images. They may have been agents, able to do this, without knowing how they got their effects. If I can accept that our whole existence is an organism, I can accept that, if by so-called miracles, its masses of social growths can best be organized and kept coordinated, then appear so-called miracles. The only flaw that I note in this argument is that it overlooks that there is no need for miracles. If there is a need for belief in miracles, miracles can be said to have occurred. We shall have an expression in terms of some of the other of our expressions. If we arrange the ideas of it neatly, if not nattily, no more will be required to impress anybody who would like to be impressed. Out in open fields there have been mysterious, or miraculous, showers of water. Then has appeared the seeming agency of human beings, and similar showers have occurred in houses. Out in open places, there are electrical manifestations, and they are known as lightning. The general specializes, and human beings use electricity, in their houses, or in images that are called machines. Or we'd say that electricians are trained agents in the uses of lightning. Out in open places there have been flows of a red liquid. In Law Nature, September 25, 1880, Professor J. Brunn, of the University of Geneva, writes that, near Jebel Sikra, Morocco, he had heard rumors of a fall of blood from the sky. He visited the place of the reported phenomenon. He says that, to his stupefaction, he found rocks and vegetation covered with scales of a red, shining material. Examining specimens under a microscope, he found them composed of minute organisms, which he tells us were Protococcus fluvialis. The identification may be doubted. I don't like it. The ease with which any writer can pick to pieces any statement made by anybody who is not present to bandy delusions with him is becoming tiresome, but if I will write a book, I will write it triumphantly. So this identification may be doubted. First we note that Professor Braun says that, instead of having the features of the algae that he had named, these organisms were simple, or undifferentiated. To explain this appearance, the professor, who had perhaps recovered from his stupefaction, says that the things were young ones. But an aggregation exclusively of young protococci is as extraordinary as would be a vast assemblage, say filling Central Park, New York, of human infants, without a sign of a parent. The explanation sublimates segregationism. It attributes to a grab, an exquisite discrimination. Somewhere in a swamp, said Professor Braun, there were hosts of protococci, venerable ones, middle-aged ones, and their brats, or all sizes, as he worded it. Along came a whirlwind, carrying away all the minute organisms. This big, rough disturbance removed, with microscopic fastidiousness, old protococci from young protococci, according to differences in specific gravity. It cast down at one place all the bereft parents, and precipitated, at Jebel Sikra, a rain of little, red orphans. When we recover from the sadness into which this tragedy cast us, we reflect that of all organisms, red blood cells are of the simplest, or least differentiated. Anyway, here is an orthodox scientist who accepted that a red fluid did fall from the sky. I have about a dozen other records of showers of red fluids that were not rains colored by dusts. Upon several of these occasions the substance was identified as blood. Or that once upon a time, or once upon an archaic time, there came to this earth, along arterial paths in space, red flows of a primitive plasm that deluged continents, and out of which, by the plan, purpose, guidance, or design that governs developments in all organisms, higher forms of life developed. And that maybe this mechanism has not altogether ceased, so that to this day, but in a vestigial sense, or in a very much dwindled representation, such flows are continuing. And that, if human beings ever have had agency in directing such flows, that is only a specialization of the general. Once upon a time, it was the fashion with those of us who say that they are of the enlightened, to reject all stories of the miracles at Lourdes. The doctors had much to do with this rejection. Somewhere behind everything that everybody believes, or disbelieves, is somebody's pocket. But now, as to those miracles, the explanation of autosuggestion is popular. Some of us who were not interested are beginning to think. The tendency that I point out is that of so often rejecting both data and an explanation, simply because one rejects an explanation. Many of our data are in this position of phenomena at Lourdes. Explanations have been taken over by theologians, or by spiritualists, and scientists, instead of opposing this usurpation, have denied the data. Whether it is only because I now want so to accept, or not, I now accept that the phenomenon of the stigmata, or flows of blood from points upon living images, has occurred. Most likely those who deny the phenomenon of the stigmata are those who have not read, or have not recently read, the story of Louise Leto, for instance. One would have to be of a very old-fashioned resistfulness not to accept this story, half an hour after reading it. For the latest instance, that of Teresa Neumann, of the village of Konnersreuth, near Munich, Germany, see the New York Times, April 18, 1928. In recent years, several cases have been reported, in the United States. Flows of blood from points in living images lead us to flows of blood from points in graven images. If one accepts the phenomenon of the stigmata, I don't know that acceptance is monstrously stretched by transferring the idea from bodies to statues. On Saturday, August 21, 1920, all statues and holy pictures, in the home of Thomas Dwan, of Templemore, Tipperary, Ireland, began to bleed. See newspapers of August 24. A boy, James Walsh, a devout youngster, aged 16, was the center of the reported phenomena, at Templemore. Perhaps the bleeding statues and pictures were trickeries of his. All boys and girls are little rascals. This is a generalization that one can feel somewhat nearly sure of, until it is examined. Then, because of continuity, we find that we cannot define boys and girls, because no definite line can be drawn between youngsters and adults. Also, rascality and virtue merge. Well, without arguing, I say that if all the boys and girls who appear in our records were rascals, they were most expert little rascals. Towns in ruins, terrible bloodshed, bombs and burnings, shocking series of murders, hellish vandalism, brutality and terrorism, hangings, ambushes, raids. Whatever the association may be, I note conditions in Ireland, at this time. Here is one newspaper heading, telling of occurrences of one day reign of terror in Ireland, terrible massacre, appalling loss of life, Holocaust, bloodshed and horror.